Theme music on compact disc. I have a really hard time. I'm sorry. Linoleum knife.
Thank you.
I have a really hard time with this. And I need to find a cassette very quickly.
You have a hard time with many things.
I'm used to the things I'm used to. I'm used to a cassette.
Okay.
Well, I'm used to a cassette.
Find
I'm
the
not used to
this
a,
cassette
a
that you
disc.
Claim.
There's no satisfying
lives
noises.
In a closet in our house somewhere.
There
I
no,
will make a cassette.
I can make the cassette. I just need to find the cassette.
You would do it.
There are no satisfying noises involved.
I was thinking
pushing buttons.
I was thinking about this. The reason our tape died so quickly,
you ruined it.
No,
somehow.
No, was because we only recorded it once, and we were playing that same section of tape and rewinding it and playing it and rewinding it and playing it and rewinding it. On the next tape, we need to record the theme song over and over and over and over again, so that we keep playing the cassette all the way through, start to finish. You dig?
How do you know that is a thing?
Because the actual tape, those first 30 seconds or whatever of cassette was being, we were using it over and over and over again. No wonder it wore out. Whereas if we just had an entire cassette that was nothing but that song over and over again with, you know, gaps in between, then the cassette would play all the way through, and then we'd flip it over and play it all the way through again.
Look,
and then it would last for
I
decades,
know for a fact,
like our kitchen cassettes.
I know for a fact that you have the Pretty in Pink soundtrack on cassette.
Yeah.
I also know for a fact that you probably, I'm just guessing, but I know you well enough to know that after the Suzanne Vega song, you stop because that's your favorite song.
Wrong.
And then you rewind it and you just got to listen to that Suzanne Vega song.
No,
again.
That's not true.
I know that's right.
No.
That's
no,
obviously a correct
because
thing.
Because then when would I get to hear Wouldn't It Be Good? That tape plays all the way through.
You like the Suzanne Vega song.
Every song is a winner on that cassette.
No, it's not.
I want to hear them all.
That's not true.
I want to hear Get to Know Ya. I want to hear The Smiths.
You don't want to hear The Smiths.
All the songs. You don't know.
Welcome to Linoleum Knife. We are a podcast of the cinema. I can't even pronounce the name of the show.
Yeah, we've only been on for 4.5 years. Why would you have learned that?
And who are you?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi, film reviews editor for The Wrap and film critic for What the Flick on the YouTube network The Young Turks.
I am also Dave White. I'm the film critic for Movies.com. On Friday, we took our show on the road, and we went to KCRW on the Press Play show.
Madeline Brand
the
show.
The hostess of Madeline Brand.
We do every
She's
4 to 6 weeks or so.
Wonderful. I failed on our appearance.
What makes you say that?
Well,
I'm not disagreeing. I just want to know what makes you say that.
Here's why I failed. I've been playing a trick on that show every single time that we've been on. It's not a super trick.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little thing that I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that is at least once during the time that we're on the show.
You like to call her the president of NPR?
No, she knows she's the president of NPR. I like to call her by her first and last name to her face.
Madeline Brand.
In a response to some sort of question that she asks.
I never noticed that you did that.
And I have done that every episode that we've been on, and they never edit out that bit. Like, they could edit that out if they felt like it, but they never do. And because we record it before the show goes on.
We pre-tape.
And they've never edited me out saying that. And I don't know where my brain was this time, but I didn't do it.
And
she's never noticed, I don't think, that that's happened.
Well, let's just hope she's not listening to this episode or the game is up.
She does not listen to this show.
I'm sure she doesn't.
She does not listen to this.
I bet she listened to the episode she was on.
Well, probably, yeah. But, I mean,
that was it.
look, our guests don't listen. They come on. They're happy to be on.
Usually they will they have listened. Listen. They'll have listened to one before they come on so they can sound like they know yes. what they're doing. Like Anthony Breznican, I know for a fact. Listen, one time.
He was such a smooth operator. He was like, oh, I heard on that other episode, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you listened to an episode. So you're a pro.
That is how you do it.
That's a good dude. I like that guy.
He's great. And if you have you not read his book yet, it's really good. Brutal Youth.
Sometimes he likes things I say on Facebook.
Well, all right.
That's how I know I made somebody laugh, actually. That's the only way. If I make you laugh, you've clicked like. Unless it's our friend Gary Cotti, who I know I make him laugh, but he doesn't click like ever because he doesn't want to be hounded by other comments from the other people. He's nodding his head at me right now that is a fact.
Somebody I read online...
He's sitting on our couch right now.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Somebody said something very wise about Twitter once, which is when you retweet something, you're saying, I want everybody else to see this.
Yes.
And when you favorite something, you're saying, I want you to know that I saw this.
Yes. No, that's... When I favorite something, it's because you made me laugh or because you mentioned me, and I'm very happy that you mentioned me.
You don't retweet if something makes you laugh?
I like to be mentioned. I like to be mentioned a lot.
Sure, we all do.
Yeah.
You don't retweet?
I mean, everywhere. I want people to mention me everywhere they go.
But you don't retweet something that makes you laugh?
What would Dave White think about this?
You're not going to answer this question, are you?
This apple tart.
Because you're not listening to me.
What?
For the eighth time, do you not retweet something that makes you laugh?
There's no if. Only sometimes.
Okay, fine.
Like, sometimes I'll retweet it.
No further questions.
Like, if it's somebody that I want other people to follow, yeah.
I see.
Yeah. I retweet Lewis a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, Lewis Vertel is the
because
king of
Twitter. Because he's always retweetable. He says funny things every single day that make me
140 characters is his canvas.
Yeah. He wins the sentence contest on Facebook, on Twitter, most of the days.
Like, he is an epigrammatical writer who has found his métier.
You just used two fancy words.
I went to college.
Hey, guess what I did?
What's that?
I went to see Black and White.
Black or White?
Whatever it's called. I went to see Black or White.
And which did you choose?
I guess, I mean, miscegenation. That's what I chose.
That's a good word.
I mean, my last name is White. Mm-hmm. I am white.
Mm-hmm.
There's no mistaking me for anything, but...
You're pale.
I'm like a very large lump of pastry dough. That's my shape. It's my flavor. I'm buttery.
And loaded with carbohydrates.
I'm full of carbohydrates. But God help me if I had to be the white people in this damn movie. Or the black people. I'm just going to say this. It's like the black people are idiots too in this film.
Everyone's stupid.
Everyone is stupid and terrible in this movie. I see. Including, I'm just going to assume this, the people who created it.
Down to
the hair and makeup. Like, I'm just... Everyone associated with this movie is an idiot.
Okay, well, all right. I haven't seen this movie. But this is a thing that I've really started noticing lately. Ever since Don Cheadle all but disappeared on stage at the Golden Globes.
Yes.
Did they light this movie for black people?
Well enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm really noticing now when TV shows don't light for black people.
Oh, yeah, because they disappear.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's why Oprah... Yes. He made such a big famously, about it all those years. Yeah. She would talk about it all the time. She'd be like, my studio is lit for black people.
Right.
And even other black guests would be like, what are you talking about? And she'd be like, you don't know. Which I always thought was great.
We can assume that Shonda Rhimes is lighting for black people.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah,
and what's his face, the DP of Selma, who also DP'd Eighth and Body Saints
and Most Violent Year. I forget his name, but he's great.
He's a really great cinematographer, whose name I'm blanking on right now. But no, everyone of all different shades looked okay in this movie.
Okay,
so maybe
so there's that.
So the DP was not an idiot. How's that?
Fair enough.
But this movie.
Tell us about it, Dave.
Okay. So, rich, white, straight man, Kevin Costner, his wife, she dies.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened already. It opens the movies, it's the funeral, right? So they have a granddaughter who lives with them because the child's mother, their daughter, died giving birth. We don't know the circumstances, other than they say something about a heart condition. But that's what they tell you. Like, Kevin Costner is telling someone she died of a heart condition giving birth. But the subtext is...
Something else happened.
She was on crack.
Uh-huh.
That's the subtext, because her boyfriend at the time...
who was also the child's father.
Who was also the child's father. He's a crackhead.
Mm-hmm.
And he's black.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed race child.
Right.
Biracial. He actually even says, when someone says, your granddaughter's black, he says, she's not black! Like, well...
Like this was an insult or something?
Yeah, it was just a weird thing. And then they're like, well, she's not white either. My favorite assertion of biracial identity...
God.
In cinema.
Are you about to quote Mandingo?
Comes from... No, I'm not.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Please. let the film professor keep talking.
Go on.
Yeah. Comes from the film Glitter. When baby Mariah shows up at the daycare.
Right.
Or the school or whatever. The
orphanage.
And all the and baby DeBrat and baby...
Tia Tejada.
Tia Tejada. Come up to her and are both like, what are you? Like, they go, what are you? And the little girl playing baby Mariah goes, I'm mix. Which is just a great... And she says it in that way, like, get away from me.
That works.
I'm a little bit of you, I'm a little bit of you, I'm a little bit of something else. Back off. Here's my cat. This cat's going to live for 35 years. Watch. End of the movie. I'm a grown woman. Cat is going to be alive.
That's right.
Carrying it around like a sack of...
Although, I have to say...
sack of flour.
I do like in Dear White People when they goof on the whole tragic mulatto
thing. Oh, when he calls her that?
Yeah.
The boyfriend calls Tessa Thompson when he calls her that. That was actually very sort of nervy.
Yeah, no, that was one of the movie's bold gambits.
This movie thinks it's being bold
later
on in the course of the action by saying something even worse than that, which I'll get to in a minute. But anyway, so the mother dies.
Right.
And he's got the granddaughter and Octavia Spencer, the child's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
This takes place in Los Angeles, so Kevin Costner lives like in some gated community somewhere. Giant house with a Latina maid that never speaks unless she's spoken to.
Ah. Is it the same one that Sandra Bullock had in Crash?
Maybe. And so...
I had to quit after she called me her best friend.
Yeah. Exactly. You're my best friend. Goodbye.
Here's my 2 weeks notice. You're creeping me out.
But, so... Octavia Spencer, he lives in the fancy house. Octavia Spencer lives in South Central.
Okay.
In a giant, really beautiful, old sort of craftsman, just rambling.
So not even like Baldwin Hills, like South Central.
Sprawling out. She lives in like Compton.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, and she's a very successful business owner. She has like six businesses. She never went to high school. She's like this self-made woman.
Mm-hmm.
She takes care of 40 people, all of whom are just hanging out at this house. So the film never mentions these people at all. Her extended family.
It's like those random kids in The Color Purple that you don't know who they belong to.
Yeah, you know whose kids they are. Yeah. Like, there's like cousins and grandchildren and other children and spouses and little kids running around.
And none of them are working at the six businesses?
None of them are working at the six businesses. They're playing cards. They're watching TV. The film never comments on this. It just shows all the black people sitting around doing nothing.
Oy.
Okay. Except for Octavia Spencer's lesbian daughter, who lives across the street with her wife and their mess of kids. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was, again, seven children. Like, and it's assuming that you don't even know, you don't know if they're adopted or made or whatever.
The Fosters.
Because nobody who is black in this film gets to have any story attached to them other than Octavia Spencer, self-made woman, Anthony Mackie, her younger brother, angry lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
No reason. Angry. Just angry.
Mm-hmm.
And the crackhead son, who I believe is played by the guy who was the doctor on the neck.
Yes.
Okay.
That's true.
I don't know his name.
I should know this, and I don't.
And,
Pair of Shoes. That's an episode, not his name.
Yes, yes. No, I know. I remember that episode. Yes. And so she goes to Kevin Costner and says, I'm taking this kid. This kid needs, like, all her family. This kid needs her grandmother and her aunts and her uncles and her cousins and everybody.
Right.
This kid needs to have 40 other black people around her, except, and not you, one lone white guy who's drunk all the time.
That's a fair argument,
I might say. It is a fair argument. The movie doesn't think so, and here's why. The movie contextualizes every bad thing that Kevin Costner does. The movie is like, I'm grieving my wife, therefore I'm drinking.
Oh, so he wasn't drunk before.
The movie never even says or calls him out for really being an alcoholic, other than Octavia Spencer saying, you're an alcoholic! Everyone else is sort of like, well, he's sad, so he's drinking. But in general, he's the good guy, right? And all the black people in this movie are, like, reactionary, yelling, upset, unreasonable, It is an actually, it's a mind-blowing film that wants to think that it is having this evolved conversation about race, but in reality is completely racist. Like, to the point where I sat there laughing at just how terribly racist it was.
Oh,
and,
man.
You know, when you're watching these actors do this, you're like, well, it was a job, you know.
Yeah.
It was a job. You were in this movie.
And I think that, you know, it's like this that old joke about the guy, you know, who they ask him what Hamlet's about, and he says it's about a gravedigger who meets a prince.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times when you're an actor, you create your own backstory. You're doing all this work on your character.
On your character,
and you don't think it's racist because
the bigger picture
you have given yourself all these motivations
and
all this stuff.
It's not in your control.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ultimately, the text and the subtext of somebody else's business, you are going into this thinking, well, I'm creating this strong black woman, or I'm creating this da-da-da character, and subsequently, obviously, the movie is going to stand up for that because that's my... Yeah, but no, apparently not, I guess.
The movie... This is a movie that says there's no race problem because I say there's not. There's no context for white people getting everything they want because I'm white and I don't see it.
Wow.
It's nuts. And I'm just going to spoil the film.
Oh, dude.
He wins custody of the kid at the end. Here's why. Because the crackhead guy comes into the court and says, give the kid to him. I can't be this child's parent. And then Octavia Spencer agrees with him and says, you know what? Yeah, let's let him have custody. Like, wait, she just gives up in the middle of the courtroom scene.
I thought the whole thing wasn't the crackhead was going to take him, but the crackhead shows up,
she includes him in the mix.
Oh, I see.
He's like, look, she needs to be with her father.
He's like the straw man.
He's cleaning up. He's all cleaned up. He's not on drugs anymore, which he wasn't. He was totally on drugs.
I see.
The whole movie. And then at the end, Octavia Spencer's character just says, yeah, you know what? You're right. Just give her to Kevin Costner. It's fine. We'll go visit. We'll go to the fancy house and visit. Seriously, that's the movie. And then it's done. It's over. And then the last scene is them all having a barbecue and teaching Kevin Costner to dance.
Oh. Does anyone even raise the idea of, like, hey, there's a compromise to be had here? Like, she can live with you, but maybe she can spend the weekends with the family.
Joint custody is out of this film's comprehension.
Can't even bother to address
it. It is far too radical an idea for this movie to even approach as a subject.
Brother.
It is flabbergasting, this movie.
Wow.
Yeah. And okay. It's a true story. The writer director, apparently this happened to him.
Yeah, like he's taking care of a niece or something.
Look, if it is a true story and this is really how it happened to him and he's still a drunk and it's still that way, someone needs to take that kid away from that guy.
Well, the guy's not a widow, so he might not be a drunk either.
Well, who knows? Who knows what he is? I know he's an actor who also directs.
Yeah.
I've seen him. He's like a character actor.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember his name right now.
Mike Binder.
Mike Binder, you have made a terrible, terrible film.
But what's insane, though, is it's one thing to make a terrible film if it's just this thing you made up. But if it's ostensibly based on your actual experience and you still make something that has no...
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Like, no black person in this film is given the benefit of the doubt for anything.
Ugh.
But white people... Kevin Costner
get away with murder.
Yeah, Kevin Costner can get away with anything in this movie, and that's the story.
Wow,
it's crazy.
Okay, well,
go see it, everybody. It'll knock you on your head.
If we're talking about crackpot movies that people need to see, this week offers a bumper crop.
Let's talk about Seventh Son, which you have not seen.
I did not, Why don't you? Yeah, this is the other movie that you saw that I didn't see.
Julianne Moore is a witch. She's the best witch of everybody.
As opposed to the worst witch.
She's also the worst witch
because she's the TV movie with Tim Curry.
She is the meanest of the witches.
Uh-huh.
She dresses impeccably, though. Mm-hmm. She's got these, like, very tailored, black feathered, like, gowns and stuff. And she always looks really...
Is it like when all the crows fly around Charlize Theron and Snow White the Huntsman and become her gown?
A little bit, yeah. It's not as elaborate as that because that was a better movie.
No.
But, it's medieval time. Everyone else is all muddy and gross, but not Julianne Moore. Like she's
they don't have utensils, but they do have Pepsi.
That's right.
Okay,
and so she also has this external spine that she can extend and wrap around you like a boa constrictor and
like a scorpion tail.
Squeeze the life out of you and kill you. She can turn into a dragon.
Sure.
A dragonette.
If she feels dragoness.
If she feels like it. And
a dragon, G-O-N-N-E. I don't know.
And she has a years, decades, centuries long feud with Jeff Bridges.
Mm-hmm. Because who wouldn't?
Oh, the talking like this in the whole movie.
Oh, wait, they were both in Lebowski, right?
Yeah, they were.
Oh, funny. Yeah. Okay, go on.
So, like I was saying on the Madeline Brand show, he is Rooster Cogburn, Witch Slayer.
As opposed to being Rooster Cogburn, undead sheriff in R.I.P.D.
Right. Yes.
Is this what he's just going to do now?
His new thing is Mouthful of Rocks.
Great.
And,
Rooster Cogburn, Demosthenes.
Now, the title of the movie comes from the idea that the main character, is meant to be Ben Barnes. Now, do you remember Ben Barnes as Prince Caspian from the Narnia film? From the Narnia movies?
Barely.
No, of course you don't. Here's why. He's boring. There's a certain kind of young, attractive actor and or actress.
Boy ingenue.
That winds up just being in movies.
Right.
Certain kind of good-looking person that winds up being in films.
And they're sort of a placeholder.
And you could be in films as that kind of person for a decade or more.
Hayden Christensen.
And keep getting chance after chance after chance and wind up in big-budget films.
What's his face? Brandon Routh.
Yeah. People whose talent is unexplored, if it exists at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then every once in a while, someone comes along. Well, a perfect example. Here's the dictionary definition of this person: Charlize Theron.
Mm, yeah.
They put her in every kind of movie, Mighty
Joe Young,
you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And that whole time, she was working behind the scenes to sort of like get her power chips, you know, get the money connections,
mm-hmm.
you know. Meet and charm producers and
become enough of a name.
Spend her time becoming enough of a name and suffering through the indignity of being on the cover of Maxim and and finally be like, all right, here's what's going to happen. I got $1 million lined up. I'm going to make this movie about a female serial killer. I'm going to gain 30 pounds. I'm going to put on some fake teeth and a fake nose. I'm going to do this. And then she did it. And suddenly the whole world was like, oh, she can act? Look at that. Really incredibly beautiful woman. She can act.
And to be fair to Brandon Routh, he's actually funny in Zach and Miri Make a Porno.
Yeah, he is.
And I never saw Breaking Glass, but I heard Hayden Christensen.
But I don't know what Ben Barnes can do, because I've only seen him do nothing.
Right.
And he does nothing in this movie, too. Mm-hmm. This movie is about him. He's the seventh son of a seventh son.
Mm-hmm.
Which means he's going to witch slay.
Right.
He's going to become the apprentice to Jeff Bridges. And then he does that, and no one cares. It's all about the fight between Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore and Olivia Williams, who plays Ben Barnes' mother, who also turns out to be a witch, but a good witch.
Mm.
And she's stolen the secret amulet that's going to protect Ben Barnes from Julianne Moore, but then another teen witch steals it back and gives it to Julianne Moore.
Top that.
And that becomes a big thing, and... it's the stupidest, most, like, Bibbs called it Krull, which is true. It's very Beastmaster. Yeah. It's a bad, bad, dumb, stupid movie. I was thoroughly entertained from start to finish. It is as stupid as it can be. And here's how you know it's good. At the press screening, the film ends with a big crescendo of sound and noise. The score does this thing. Boom. And the minute the music is over, the screen goes immediately black, and there's this beat of silence and black screen before the credits begin. There is a film critic in our universe who is very well known.
Oh, you're not going to...
Very respected. Very, very important film critic. I won't say her name, but her initials are Manola Dargis.
Frequent guest on this program. Well,
and the minute
three times
the screen, oh God, the minute the screen goes black and silent, you hear her voice in the darkness. Now, this is a woman who is not given to pronouncements of this sort ever.
Yeah, I've never heard her speak up during a movie.
Screen goes black and quiet, and you hear her voice go, well, my goodness!
Ooh, should have been there for that.
Now, she's the best.
Now, Sergei Bodrov, who directed this thing... He's like a real filmmaker, right?
Someone should put him in jail.
Well, but
actual jail.
I'm trying to remember why I know his name. Like
he made a film in the 90s that was nominated for a Best Foreign Language Film, I think. Something the Sun, Burnt by the Sun. Is that the name of it?
Is that him?
Was that him? I think that was him.
I'm looking him up right now. Prisoner of the Mountains.
Prisoner of the Mountains.
East West.
I think it was Prisoner of the Mountain.
Yeah. So I mean, he's a real guy. I've heard of this.
Yeah, no, he's real.
He's for real.
This movie is also very real.
Prisoner of the Mountains, 1996.
Yeah, and it was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film.
Hmm.
It did not win, as this film also will not win.
Except maybe at the Razzies, perhaps.
Maybe at the Razzies.
Oh, you know what?
I'm really into Julianne Moore.
I have met this guy.
Have you?
He came to the USA Film Festival the first year I worked there in 1990 with a movie called Freedom is Paradise.
Okay.
Was he nice? He was very nice.
Okay, great.
And this was
I like it. I like people getting paid.
Yeah.
You know, nice people should get paid.
Totally.
And I just... I can only imagine Julianne Moore and Jeff Bridges having a heck of a time working together on this film. And just with the minute it goes, the minute someone else cut, they're like, woohoo! What are we doing here?
Drinks in my trailer.
Exactly. It's completely enjoyable. It's the worst.
Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see it, but I think I need to see it with the right people.
Yeah.
Interesting. Also, nutty and over the top, but super entertaining, for me anyway, Jupiter Ascending.
Talk about it. I've already explained two films.
Okay. I'd be happy to. Okay. So, Mila Kunis is a housekeeper and an illegal, she's an undocumented Russian immigrant who was born in a shipping container while being smuggled into the United States after the death of her father, a Brit named Alexander Jones, who was an astronomer. So she is named Jupiter Jones.
That's a perfect name.
Which is a great name.
It's a perfect
name. It's a great name for a comic book heroine, and this is so much a comic book movie. It turns out that Jupiter Jones is the exact DNA replica of the recently deceased Ivana Trump of the universe, who owns a bunch of planets, including Earth.
Yes.
And Earth has hit that point where it's just overpopulated enough for this alien race to come in and cull all the people who live on it to make the goo that make the aliens live forever and ever and ever.
Opulence.
Yes.
You own everything.
So she winds up being protected by part wolf alien Channing Tatum.
I like to call him a space wolf.
Space wolf, fine. With the help of part space bee, Sean Bean, yep, against the three conniving heirs to the dead real estate lady's throne.
Eddie Redmayne plus cape.
Eddie Redmayne doing full Shirley Bassey drag and, yes, and giving this movie all the crazy he can. Tuppence Middleton as the ambitious middle daughter, and then
that's a great name too.
It is.
It's right. That's her real name.
Yeah,
that's
right there with Imogen name. Poots.
Yes.
And then I forget who plays the other son who has like crazy lady orgies, and tries to marry.
I love that scene where they walk in on him and he's floating. He's like levitating, and all these chicks are sort of like
swimming around him,
writhing around him while levitating, and they're having like a clothes on. Float orgy.
No, they're naked. They're just sort of strategically filmed, oh, so you don't see anything.
Well, it looked like their clothes were on.
And his aide-de-camp, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, comes in the room, and he bellows something along the lines of...
They gave her these sweet potatoes for
years.
Yes,
these tubers.
So great.
He bellows something along the lines of, don't nobody bring me no bad news, or something like, I do no bad news in this chamber, or something. Anyway, this movie is nuts. So, he tries to marry Mila Kunis at one point, and puts her in a wedding dress that involves the craziest headdress I've seen in a movie since Boom. And she spends most of the movie having things explained to her at length and not getting them, and falling off of things and having Channing Tatum rescue her with his, like, rocket parkour boots.
Yes.
A lot of this movie looks like it should be painted on the side of a van, and I mean that as a good thing. There's a little too much orange and blue, which everybody's sort of been pointing out
lately.
That's
the new thing.
Is the
I mean, it's not the new thing that's been happening in films. It's the new thing that people are
noticed.
Talking.
Yeah.
People are talking about
the overused color palette of action movies. I was thoroughly entertained from start to finish, even though I knew this movie was bollocks. And so, yeah, it's ridiculous and pointless, and weird decisions were made, but boy, was I not ever bored. I know, you want weirder. You want more unfettered Wachowski.
I was a little bored.
Okay.
Not all the way bored, and not bored with the things I was seeing.
Right.
Bored with the form.
The origin story.
I don't like the origin story anymore. I want them to trash it, set it on fire, start over.
I want somebody to make...
I want the origin story to have a surgical alteration.
Well,
I want it to be done in a different way entirely. Whatever that means, whatever it takes, I'm not the one who's going to write it.
Right.
Somebody out there with a vision has to do an origin story that doesn't feel like every other origin story.
Did you ever see Buckaroo Banzai?
I have never seen Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh my gosh.
I know, okay, it's wow. One of your favorites.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, see, one of the great things about that movie is that it plays like the fourth chapter of a saga.
Right.
And it just assumes that you know what's going on.
Let
or
someone do
can
that,
pick
then.
It up. So that's what's great. Like, there's no origin. Like, it's this is a story well in progress. This whole team is established. All these things are going on. And you're just supposed to take it as read and given that this is already happening.
It upsets me that after such wild films as Speed Racer, no, you're wrong about that.
No.
Speed Racer and Cloud Atlas.
Which I admire its ambition.
Which is, Cloud Atlas is extravagant. Cloud
yes.
Atlas is the I think, the purest expression of the Wachowskis. And it is weird and just wonderful and
I don't think
borderline, like, manically crazy.
I don't think it entirely succeeds, but I admire its sort of unfettered sense of...
They are allowed to reach, and they reach.
Yeah.
And I think the disappointment...
With the help of Tom Tykwer.
I think the disappointment that of those two films in terms of their financial success...
Right.
And their critical sort of drubbing that a lot of... that they took. I think more people liked Cloud Atlas than Speed Racer.
Yes. Speed Racer has its defenders. I am not one of them.
I am. And I think that what happened this time around was someone said, okay, you need to get back in the box. Get back in a box that people can recognize.
Right.
Let this idea that you have take a form that people can recognize
mm-hmm.
and latch themselves onto. And I would hate for these two... to have their art compromised with, you know, Hollywood pandering. And so I was not unhappy when it was over. I was just sort of disappointed.
You're not mad, just disappointed.
I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. Like, I want more. I want...
You could feel them applying the brakes to themselves.
I want wilder. I don't want them... I don't want... No backstepping.
Right.
Forward. Move forward. Push through. Be something even crazier than what you were.
Well, you know, Hollywood has a history of not, you know, they'll allow sort of reckless indulgence
as long as you're making money.
But if you're Joseph von Sternberg, at some point they're like, ying.
Because I think about Lana Wachowski.
Uh-huh.
And I think about all those years that she was Larry uh-huh. Wachowski. Pretty much mute. I don't remember ever hearing a word.
Well, they were both sort of press phobic.
Yes.
It wasn't like Andy yes. was out doing all the talking.
But here's the thing. Really. I know. But.
And they still are.
Then suddenly, well.
She gave that one speech. And
then suddenly she transitions.
Uh-huh.
And she's a badass. She's talking. She's saying things.
Right.
She's given that incredible speech
mm-hmm.
at, what was it, GLAAD? Was it GLAAD?
Somebody.
Human Rights Campaign, somebody.
Yeah.
Incredible speech. This open sort of feeling takes mm-hmm. place suddenly.
Right.
And then Cloud Atlas comes out, and that feels like this gigantic sort of wide open, you know, sort of declaration.
A movie about the fluidity of identity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it excited me so much to think, this is the beginning. This is the beginning of a new direction. They're going somewhere wild now. They're going somewhere big and bold, and it's going to be amazing.
And this was not that.
This was not exactly that.
Well,
this was something else.
Lana Wachowski can have a fulfilling and exciting life without getting giant budgets to make crazy personal films.
Well, I know. And, you know, I said, you know, this may require, you know, a small budget and just being scrappy again.
True. They started with Bound, you know.
Yes.
We forget that. Like, that was not, that was practically a two-hander or a three-hander, yeah. You know. All shot, just about all shot in one building, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, they have it in them. They could do it again.
So I'm looking forward to more.
Yeah.
But this feels like a beauty pageant in a prison. Like I won the prison beauty pageant. Well, that's great. You are very beautiful. You're still in prison.
Interesting metaphor. Okay, fair enough. Or simile, whatever it was. I think we can agree.
That's why they pay me a minimal amount of money yes. to come up with this sort of thing.
That's right. I think we can agree that the week's unalloyed success is the SpongeBob movie.
SpongeBob.
Sponge Out of Water.
Yes. The first children's film to employ the internet's C-punk aesthetic to a feature-length film. The sort of thing that you would normally see on Adult Swim. I'm referring specifically to the all-seeing dolphin that lives in a pyramid in outer space that shoots lasers from its blowhole.
Right. Well, but I kind of feel like there's a fine line between the Adult Swim aesthetic and the stuff they do on, you know, regular show and Adventure Time and yes. Clarence or whatever. Like, that's sort of the norm now, I feel
I know.
Like. And so probably even the SpongeBob TV show goes there, and we don't watch it, so we don't know.
Well, I've watched it enough to know that they don't usually go there.
Okay. So the premise here is that things are...
Unless they've changed radically in the past few years. I have not watched SpongeBob in the past few years, but I have seen more than a handful of episodes of SpongeBob.
Okay.
I've seen my share of episodes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So the...
And I'm not even a weed person.
That's true.
Yeah.
So the premise here is that things are tough in Bikini Bottom because Plankton is trying to steal the secret formula for Krabby Patties from the Krusty Krab, and after many battles with him, suddenly that formula disappears, and chaos and anarchy are reigning in Bikini Bottom. It's up to SpongeBob and Plankton to form a team to get the formula back from the pirate Burger Beard, played by Antonio Banderas, who has turned his ship into a food truck. And that involves the dolphin who lives in a pyramid in space turning SpongeBob and his friends into three-dimensional characters who can breathe air so they can leave the ocean and battle Burger Beard. I had a great time.
It's a lot of fun.
It is nonstop funny, and it's nonstop smart, weird, wonderful funny. You
lots of puns and visual stuff.
Yeah, you do not have to take a kid to this movie. You can just go.
You can be 5. You can be 55. You'll enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
It's not. It's got the innocence that you want from a film that is aimed at 5-year-olds.
Yes, absolutely.
But it does not have the rock stupid.
Exactly, the dull wittedness of that kind of thing. And it, you know, they're selling the whole live action-y part really hard, but that doesn't happen until the third act of the movie. The 3D is worth it for the Mexican restaurant themed time travel sequences. They've got their voice cast from the show who are great, so it's not like a bunch of dumb celebrity voices piping up for no reason. It's great. You should see it.
I think what is...
The two best films of 2015 so far are Paddington and SpongeBob.
Pretty much. Mainstream releases, at least. Films like Paddington and SpongeBob, and I always go back to this one, to, you know, Winnie the Pooh, and they just prove that you can do this stuff. You can make animation to appeal to everyone. And it doesn't have to look like everything else, and it doesn't have to move like everything else. So I'm team this stuff.
You can make smart kids movies that are universally appealing, and without pandering.
Alonzo Duralde.
Yes, Dave White.
Linoleum Knife is brought to you by The Real Truth.
It is.
Do you know what is that?
I believe you mean The Real Truth, Everything You Didn't Know You Needed to Know About Making an Independent Film by Reed Martin,
published by
Faber and Faber.
That's what I'm talking about.
Go on.
Perhaps you've been keeping up with the news lately, have you?
I try.
What are you noticing in the news about the news?
Are we talking about, like, what's happening in Syria, or are we talking about the film industry?
films?
Oh, I imagine that new distribution channels are opening up all the time. What with Amazon announcing that they're getting into the feature film game after their success at television streaming.
You have read this email before sending it to me.
Why, no.
No? That was just a guess?
No, I'm kidding. I read the email.
Okay. Do you know that the Sundance Film Festival just concluded?
I am aware of that.
Were you there?
I was.
When did you go? Where was I?
You were here doing a podcast with
Whitney. What is happening? There were lots of news reports out of Sundance.
There were.
I hear.
Because you're following the news all the time.
About how two of the most important buyers of independent films, going forward, are Ted Sarandos of Netflix and Roy Price of Amazon.
Right.
These guys are going to increasingly be the new kingmakers.
Kingmakers?
Kingmakers.
Okay.
King cake makers.
Oh, if only.
At festivals. You heard it here first. They're going to make cakes for everyone at festivals. They've had a lot of success, these two guys, with House of Cards, for example.
Yes.
And Transparent, for other example.
Yes.
If you're an aspiring indie filmmaker, a screenwriter, or whatever you would do with an indie film, and you hope to find out more about online distribution, guess what? Guess what's in The Real Truth? That book that I'm talking about. Guess what's in it?
Information about online distribution?
Interviews with Sarandos and Price.
Whoa!
Also, an entire chapter on how to get your film on sites like Fandor and Hulu.
Boom.
Finally, The Real Truth has an F-ton of advice.
A ton.
He didn't put that
one. No. FMOS 3.
Advice from the head of Amazon's original movies division.
Cool.
That is veteran producer Ted Hope. Perhaps you've heard of him.
Formerly of Fandor and formerly of Good Machine.
He made American Splendor and The Ice Storm.
He did.
And The Wedding Banquet.
Yes.
Among many others.
Yes.
So he's in that book as well. Three more interviews that we have never even talked about being in this book. This book is so thick.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Full of pages. You, all the answers.
Everything you need to know.
Everything. It's from Reed Martin. It's called The Real Truth, R-E-E-L. Everything you didn't know you need to know about making an independent film. You can get it on Kindle, on iTunes for your iPad, paperback from Faber and Faber, wherever books
are sold.
What's your DVD pick?
My DVD pick is Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown.
That's a good one.
Which is coming to DVD for the very first time. It is the third?
It is the third feature.
Of the Peanuts features.
It is the first one to not be...
A total bummer.
Overtly sad.
Yeah. Boy Named Charlie Brown and Soupy Come Home are great, but they are...
They will make you cry.
They will make you cry. Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown is more lighthearted. And they go to camp. And wind up getting in a big river race with these mean guys who have a cat.
Yes.
It's the movie that taught me the word tally.
Well, yeah.
There is a running joke where Peppermint Patty makes all the girls in the girls' tent vote on everything they do. And Marcy is always collecting the ballots and taking a tally. So not quite at Soupy Come Home level, but it's perfectly entertaining. And, you know, it's great that it's now available, so... what's yours, Dave White?
All right. How many times do you think I've mentioned this film that I'm about to mention?
I hope this is the last one. Because really. But I will say this. You've mentioned this film a lot, and people have had almost no chance to see it, no matter where they live.
But now they have a chance.
But now they
do. Now they can see it. Chiming Lang's Stray Dogs is now available on Blu-ray and DVD from Cinema Guild.
Well, it will be available this Tuesday, the 10th.
Available from Cinema Guild on Tuesday. Also on this DVD is his even more recent film, Journey to the West, which I haven't even seen, and as of last week, did not know existed.
Yeah, somebody had it on their top 10 list. We were like, well, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. So, I'm stoked. I'm buying a copy so I can see Journey to the West. This is a magnificent film. It is...
Stray Dogs.
Painfully sad. It is about a family struggling to survive on the streets of Taipei. And it requires a lot of you, the audience. If you do buy this, and you do watch it on your TV,
turn off all the other screens.
Remove all distractions. It requires that you look and keep looking. This isn't for when you're doing your ironing. Like when I'm watching Wendy Williams, she's talking about Hot Topics.
It's the only multitasking I think you know how to do.
That's what I'm doing the ironing.
To watch Wendy Williams and iron at the same time.
When you watch everything and you're on your phone, which is how you watch things, unless you're in an actual movie theater. I don't know how you do that, but you would not be allowed to do that.
Okay. Stray Dogs requires looketing, is what you're saying.
It requires that you look it.
Okay.
You better keep looketing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Y'all watch this movie. You may not like it at all, and you'll probably, maybe you'll hate me when you do watch it, and then you're like, oh God, I can't believe I tried to watch that movie.
When you brought that up on our Best of 2014 show,
Peter.
Peter
was not a fan.
Okay. And did Manola.
He's wrong! I don't know.
Maybe she hadn't seen it.
I don't know if she's seen it or not.
Okay. Yeah, I knew somebody wasn't crazy about it.
But I don't know that she was crazy about him.
Him in general.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Or maybe she is. I don't know. We didn't get much information out of her on that
topic.
So I can't really put words in her mouth
Fair
about
enough.
That.
Go back and listen to the episode.
But Peter was like, I can't get through that movie.
Ah.
He was like, well, what if I propped your eyeballs open with toothpicks and made you look at it? Required you to keep looketing. Clockwork Orange style.
Yeah, so I think we all got it.
Hey, maybe that would do you the right. Maybe that would do you right.
Letters.
I would never do that to Peter DeBruges. I like him very much.
Yes.
He's a very nice man.
He is.
I would never harm his eyelids with toothpicks. But maybe somebody needs to do that.
Oh, you hush.
What's the thing?
Letters.
A letter?
We have.
You want to know about a letter?
I do.
Where are they? Hang on.
Brother.
Stop it. I'm almost there. Letters are coming. Here's a letter. Top 10 of the year from Colin.
Okay.
Dear freewheeling Ricky Candyface Mastukes sex happening.
You and your nicknames.
We could just go with the freewheeling day one.
Today OG, I shall be called Phoebe.
The OG nickname of me was the freewheeling day one.
Yeah. Which is hilarious.
Sex happening is pretty good, too. Because mm-hmm. that's what I am.
I'm going to go with Miss Good Thighs, but pick your own favorite.
For the third year in a row, I'm sending you my top 10 films.
Did I get addressed in this, or just you and all your stupid nicknames?
He says also star of YouTube, Alonzo.
Thank you.
You know, you're whatever.
Just checking.
For the third year in a row, I'm sending you my top 10 films of the year that I published on my own podcast, Raw Footage.
Mm-hmm.
And the link...
.co.uk.
The link to that is raw-footage.co.uk. So Colin is from the UK. What a surprise. Someone from England named Colin. These were films given a general release in the UK between the 26th of September 2013 and the 25th of September 2014.
Oh, wow. He cuts it off that early.
Look, he's got his own way of doing things.
No, I just want to be clear on what we're talking about.
Look, that's a whole different country. They have different words for everything, too.
Yes, they're putting U's in things all the
I'm
time.
I'm constantly talking. Every week, at least once a week, I have a conversation with my friend Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, what the hell is this word? Why is this word?
Well, you like that cute...
And his own answer invariably is, well, because we speak English. And you speak whatever rubbish it is you're speaking over there.
You like that cute food channel lady who's always talking about aubergines and...
Lorraine Pascal.
Aubergines and...
She's my new crush.
And courgettes.
Her show is borderline useless, but because they never measure anything. But...
And when they do, it's all in grams.
But she's... Like, I'm smitten with her. She's so pretty. I just want to keep looking at her.
She is pretty.
Yeah. I take the start of the year to be Boxing Day.
Wait, so it's not September, it's December.
Yeah.
You said September.
Oh, did I say September?
Yes.
Oh, I meant December. Oy. With a D-E-C.
Okay, that's not different in England. That's just you being
I'm going to read this sentence. I'm going to read the sentence and I'm going to start over.
That'd be great.
These were films given a general release in the UK between the 26th of December,
okay,
2013, and the 25th of December, 2014.
Fair enough.
I take the start of the year to be Boxing Day.
All right.
So I can put together my review shows quickly at the end of the year. This does mean that many 2013 Oscar contenders are in this list, while many 2014 Oscar contenders that I loved, like Whiplash, Birdman, and Selma, will be on next year's list.
Yeah.
I saw 166 eligible films this year, and my top 10 is as follows. 10, Obvious Child.
Yay.
And he's got a little after each thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's somewhat depressing that a film that approaches the subject of abortion in an adult manner is rare enough to be unusual. This was filthy and very funny. Manola Dargis is now dead to me.
Oh. Just agree to disagree. I do it all the time with you.
Edge of Tomorrow uses the Groundhog Day tropes in a surprisingly fun and interesting way. Doesn't quite land the ending, but a great film. Who doesn't like seeing Tom Cruise die over and over?
By the way, if you're a fan of Emily Blunt and you're in the Los Angeles area,
oh yes,
go to outfest.org and get your tickets now. We are doing a 10th anniversary screening of My Summer of Love as part of the Outfest West Hollywood series, and Ms. Blunt herself will be in attendance doing a Q&A afterwards.
Directed by Pavel Pavlovsky.
Directed by Pavel Pavlovsky, who did Ida.
Ida, that isn't currently nominated for an Academy Award.
Two Academy Awards.
Two of them.
So this is going to be a big deal, and it's going to sell out because it's at the West Hollywood Library, and it's a pretty intimate house, so get your tickets now. I'm so excited because Emily Blunt is, you know, coming off the year that she had with both Edge of Tomorrow and Into the Woods, I'm just thrilled that we got her.
Calvary. I know Alonso was not on board with this film, but I found it a brilliant examination of faith, redemption, and duty.
You're the worst.
Duty.
It was an examination of duty.
Also.
It's so easy. It's so easy.
An examination of duty.
7.
This is why we can't get 7, sponsors.
7, Concussion.
Apart from Reed, bless his heart. Concussion. It was you that made me see this film in the 5 seconds it was at my local cinema.
Yay. And by you, he means me, because you, Dave White, have still not seen it.
2 days, 1 night.
Oh, great, yeah.
I was surprised and delighted when Marion Cotillard got an actress nomination for this, but depressed that the film did not make the foreign language list.
Yep.
Yeah.
It deserved to.
Do the Dardens ever get nominated for anything? Academy Award wise?
I think they have.
Have they?
I think they have. I don't care about Oscars enough to know for sure, but I
life
want to
itself,
say they have.
Life itself.
Okay.
A moving portrait of a man dying and an interesting examination of his life, which is by an extension an examination of film criticism itself.
Sure.
The Lego Movie, the most joyful experience I had in a cinema during 2014. 12 Years a Slave.
Okay.
The type of film I'm glad exists, and I'm glad I saw once, but I never want to see again.
Amen.
Boyhood. Do I really need to explain this one? You do not.
No.
Her.
Okay.
Combines two of my favorite things, a relationship portrayed in a naturalistic way, and some deep philosophical sci-fi.
Oh, Her was number one.
Okay. Yeah, Her was okay. Number one. I want to thank Dave for Flying the Flag, for Norte, The End of History. Many Dave films are ones I don't appreciate. I despise the Torinars. Well, now you're dead to me.
Dirt in their eyes.
But Norte was an amazing considering it was a four-hour movie from the Philippines. Sid Lucero was my best supporting actor in my award show, and I add my voice to saying, this is one to see if you think you might be able to cope with the running time. Colin, he is from Bath.
Well, thank you, Colin, from
Bath.
Thank
you, Colin, from Bath.
And your top 10 list is 100% knife.
Yes. Except your dislike of the turn horse, which is 0% knife.
So, and thank you especially for mentioning Concussion, because it's still great, and Dave White still needs to see it.
Hey, buy something from us.
Yes, our brand new Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife. The Poseidon Adventure commentary.
$1.99.
Recorded with our friend Brian Boskind,
who is the Poseidon Adventure expert of everybody.
Well, he didn't want us to call him an expert.
I don't care what he wants.
He is an enthusiast and...
He's an expert.
He provided a great deal of background information and insider knowledge that really made this, I think, one of our best commentaries to date.
I think so, too.
So you should totally get it. Email, PayPal us $1.99 at Linoleum Podcast.
There's got to be a morning after.
At gmail.com, and we will send that out to you forthwith. You can also purchase our previous commentaries for movies like...
If we can hold on through the night.
For movies like Clue, Two for the Road, Josie and the Pussycats, and The Apple.
I'm sorry, I can't even sing.
Maureen McGovern is suing us, I think, right now.
Let's keep on looking for the light.
Okay, no, no, let's not.
Oh, can't you see the morning after?
I'm going to sing the Angie theme if you don't like as always, we recommend that you check out our friends online. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Go to check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, Malton on Movies, and The Canon featuring Amy Nicholson. Those are all over at Wolf Pop Radio. The B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, of course. Yeah. The Schmoes Know. The Bret Easton Ellis podcast. Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. Thank you to Blue for our wonderful theme music, and you can visit him online at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Subscribe to this show for free at iTunes, and leave us a nice review. It does help people find the program. You can also stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com, and leave us feedback there as well. Like our Facebook page, join our Facebook group, the Linoleum Knife group page, I guess is what it's called, where our listeners talk to each other about movies. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast, and again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to drop us a line with top 10 lists or crazy film-related stories or anything you want.
Give us your money.
Give us your money. PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, $1.99 each for our extra episodes.
Nickels, nickels, nickels.
It all we are going to get more shirts soon because we sold out of the latest batch. So that's a thing. And as always, we thank you for listening. We will catch you next time.
Goodbye.